And we are live. Welcome to episode 225 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest insight scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Before we get started, we've got a pretty big milestone coming up, don't we, my friend?
Yeah, we are about to hit our five-year anniversary of starting this podcast. We originally wanted to start it in February of 2020, and then I caught COVID, so yeah. We pushed it back, and we started, I think, May 30th of 2020. So we've been doing this for almost 5 years. We're about to hit 5 years a week from today. We're hoping to keep on doing this for another 5 years until 5G is done and dusted, and we've moved on to 6G.
5 years for 5G, and man, it's been a lot of fun doing these with you, buddy. And it's hard to believe it's 5 years. And I've been at the firm. I know you just passed your 10th year anniversary. I'm on 9, going on 10. It's my longest gig, I think, ever, even compared to what I did in corporate America. And it's a lot of fun. I think you and I are blessed to do what we love. And without further ado, let's jump into it. So I want to talk about my first topic. And I had received this news when I was over in Paris, so it was a little time delayed, but big news with AT&T doubling down on fiber with its Lumen acquisition. And I'm sure you're going to have some things to share about this, but this is pretty massive. So basically, AT&T is acquiring the fiber portion of Lumen's mass markets business unit for nearly $6 billion. And you and I have talked on numerous podcasts about AT&T investing in fiber. You use their service. I've used their service in the past. Again, fiber is foundational. It provides the best experience when it comes to broadband support, backhaul that's needed for mobile services. And this just really cements what AT&T is doing from a fiber investment. The company's had very bold plans, a goal to reach 60 million locations by 2030. And certainly this, from my perspective, helps in that regard. And what more can we say about this? This is big news. What do you think about all this?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised to hear this news, but it makes tons of sense. AT&T is expanding their fiber business. This gives them even more customers, predominantly on the West Coast. And I think I was a bit surprised because I didn't think Lumen was trying to divest from their consumer business.
Yeah,
they do still get to keep their copper wireline business for customers that don't have fiber. But I think it's a great thing because I think AT&T fiber is a great service. I continue to use it. And if I move, there's now a much higher probability that I'll still have AT&T fiber.
Yeah, it certainly looks like that. And the consumer footprint is massive that comes along with this acquisition. I believe over 4 million locations. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, from my perspective, it's a consolidation play. This is also, I wasn't aware of the geographic location. You're indicating that it's West Coast, but this certainly helps with what AT&T is doing to focus on converged connectivity services, converged being obviously fixed and wireless broadband to the home with its internet 5G air service, as well as mobility as well. And we've talked about that. I wrote a Forbes article after speaking with Jen Robertson that leads mass markets. This is a huge business for AT&T. I'm not surprised. Before this deal, about $90 billion of top line revenue comes out of the mass markets consumer business for AT&T. So this will continue to add to that. And it'll be really interesting to see how accretive this is over time. In other words, not being just a share sort of consolidation for AT&T, but something that the company can meaningfully grow, having these additional locations. Congratulations to AT&T. It's a huge announcement. And I'll be sharing some insights on social media. I'm a little behind just getting back from Paris after a delay last night. But with that, let's go to your first topic. And I don't think you'll get too political on this, but you want to talk about President Trump wanting to auction 600 megahertz spectrum for 5G and eventually 6G deployment.
Yes, our dear leader, President Trump, whom I have opinions about, tweeted out that the big, beautiful bill, I'm just going to do this verbatim and use the quote, we must maintain our status as the worldwide leader in Wi-Fi, 5G, and 6G, connecting every American to the world's best networks while also keeping everyone safe. We can do both at the same time. Bottom line, I'm going to free up plenty of spectrum for auction, so Congress must put 600 megahertz in the big In the one big beautiful bill, let's make sure all options are on the table. Never bet against American ingenuity. Make America great again. Okay. The problem with that is 600 megahertz. There are no contiguous 600 megahertz bands. So right. This is really a call to auction whatever potential frequencies might be available in the 1.5 to 10 gigahertz band. So this is really also what they've been talking about in the lower 3 gigahertz band as well. There were no actual details because the actual legislation says 600 megahertz in the 1.3 to 10 gigahertz band. So clearly it's not a millimeter wave call. It's very much about mid band, low band, and even mid to high band. Yeah. But the reality is this is very like surface level, but it does show that there are lobbyists who have been in the Trump administration's ear on freeing up more spectrum for 5G and 6G and potentially Wi-Fi. And while I did not have this as a topic, I saw a LinkedIn post from some of the people I follow at Intel where they have started to test some Wi-Fi spectrum in the 7 gigahertz band, low 7 gigahertz band, and they were doing this with Broadcom. It's really interesting to see these spectrum discussions occurring, but I think it's fairly low stakes at this point. And if anything, I hope that any spectrum auctions that do occur will occur in a better fashion than the last one under the Trump administration. And I'll also just add that I think there's some appetite to generate revenue like they did with the last auction. And I think they're more focused on the fact that there is an opportunity to monetize government spectrum and to force people off of it as the government. And I think that they're once again attracted to this idea.
I agree with you. There's a huge monetization opportunity here. There is benefit. And from my perspective, the FCC, and I'm going to talk about spectrum here in a minute as well, in a different vein, but there needs to be a better process just for the allocation of spectrum in general. And it just seems like the FCC is not proactive in managing this. And then all of a sudden, our elected officials look at something and say, oh, here's an opportunity to put more money in the Treasury coffers. Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, it'll be interesting to see how this winds out. But that's a great segue to my second topic. And I want to talk about the upper 12 gigahertz spectrum band. And can low Earth orbit satellite connectivity get a boost with it? Carr, the current chairperson, has been speaking to the opportunity to free this up to facilitate service providers like AST SpaceMobile and Starlink. And the challenge is that these companies are having to work with mobile network operators and the terrestrial spectrum holdings that are already in place to enable this. But now there's discussion around, hey, looking at this upper 12 gigahertz spectrum profile and allocating that to all of these low Earth orbit satellite companies that are getting into the game. Amazon is getting into the game. OneWeb, I think they're still after it to some extent, but what do you think about all this? Is this sort of a non-news thing, your first topic, or can this really move the needle and maybe accelerate services from AST SpaceMobile and Starlink and everyone else?
I think there's potential. I think it's important that if this band is made available, that it's fairly accessible and that the auction is not heavily weighted towards one player or another.
Yeah.
So I think fair rules would be important to enable startups to be successful, because I hate to admit it, but I just think that Starlink and SpaceX are going to get favorable treatment every time. And I'm just not about that.
Yeah. And we've talked about this in the past too. Starlink has been very aggressive in trying to lobby the federal government with respect to Dish and EchoStar sitting on spectrum. And that's a topic that you and I have probably discussed a dozen times on this podcast. And so it will be interesting given Elon's current participation, or maybe that's ended now with the Trump administration. But if this does happen, it's going to have to be fairly divvied up from my perspective. But it will be interesting to see how this all winds out. But hey, let's go to your second topic. You want to talk about Apple, and I love what you do. You like to read between the lines and do the research, but you've done some research and you believe that Apple may be preparing its focus on 6G.
Yeah, I actually believe that they probably already have people working on 6G. I think they're trying to hire more people. Whether those people are already experienced in the realm, it seems like that's their focus. They want people who are already developing 6G. And I think they want to be a bigger player in 6G than they were in 5G, especially now that they have a 5G modem. They're going to need a 6G modem as well. And I think that they're going to need to build an IP portfolio. I also think they're going to need to have a patent portfolio so that they can actually negotiate royalty rates with someone like a Qualcomm to get better rates so that they don't have to pay as much, even though they're using their own modem. I think there's a lot of factors in this. I think they also need to be prepared for 6G when it comes. Yeah. I don't think they want to be as late to 5G as they were. They're about 5 years late. So I think we're really in a place where 6G, they should already have had people involved. As far as I understand, they haven't really been that involved in the standard setting. I think that they are already late to a certain degree, but that has never really stopped Apple. But I do believe that they should be doing more active involvement in setting the standards and creating new IP, enabling new features, and hopefully they'll be a driver of things like XR into the standard, even though 3GPP release 18, which is known as 5G Advanced, already has a lot of them. I think Apple, as a smartphone manufacturer and modem creator, should have a lot more influence in the 5G standard than they currently do today.
I agree. And like you mentioned, 5 years to 5G, there are a lot of challenges within that journey. They've probably learned a lot. But there are examples of even like Qualcomm getting too far in front of low Earth orbit satellite connectivity, right? Before the standards were baked, and they eventually had to abandon that, right? Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this materializes. Obviously, Apple is a huge player when you just look at their very dominant market share and in smartphones, but that's not going to get the job done at the end of the day. So I totally agree with you. They're going to have to become more participant in helping steer the 3GPP standards here for 6G. But hey, let's hit my third and final topic. We're being very efficient today. I want to talk about AWS. And in 2021, they launched a private 5G solution. Just this week, AWS has announced that it is ending its efforts in that regard. And I had several journalists reach out to me. Unfortunately, it was when I was flying back to Paris. So you may not see any of my insights in any of those articles that are being written. But I'm not surprised to see this because it was very competitive. With what the carriers like T-Mobile and AT&T are trying to do, number one. Number two, it wasn't complete and it was very complex when compared to offerings from, say, NTT and Celona as well. So from my standpoint, there were just too many hurdles, too much complexity to already navigate what's already a very complex endeavor with private cellular. But any additional thoughts from your perspective on where maybe AWS failed to deliver?
I'm not totally surprised. I never really heard that much traction for this solution.
Yeah.
I think this was more of a solution looking for a problem.
I agree.
And I think that there might be some opportunities down the road, but I'm not sure that it would be enough to stand up an entire business within AWS. And more likely, it's better served by startups and utilizing AWS infrastructure potentially, because I think that's what this play was. And I think it was just a little bit, to your point, too complicated for people to deploy as is. But I think they'll be back probably with something else and potentially partnered with a startup in the space.
Yeah, telco is difficult, man. It is typically a low margin business, and that's evidenced by sort of the hits or misses, and really the longer tail adoption with private cellular in general. And yeah, when you look at Microsoft Azure and the fact that they've pretty much, and they weren't necessarily focusing on private 5G services, but they had a whole telecom group that's basically been disbanded. And so I think the hyperscalers have figured out, and there's all this promise around telco cloud as well. But at the end of the day, you've had the incumbents in the space, the infrastructure incumbents in the space from the likes of Ericsson and Nokia and Huawei that are doing telco clouds. From my perspective, I understand the rationale for the hyperscalers to want to participate in this, but at the end of the day, it was probably just not a great fit for them. So interesting stuff. But let's hit your third and final topic. You want to talk about Xiaomi, and they've launched an SoC with ARM, right?
Yeah, so we were talking about this, I think, last week.
Yeah.
And it was my third and final topic that week, too. So this is Xiaomi's new X-Ring 01. It's interesting because the rumors were that this was going to be more of a mainstream SoC, but it will utilize ARM V9 Cortex CPUs and their Immortalis GPUs. What's interesting is that ARM posted a blog about this on their own website, and so they've been promoting it quite a bit as well. And yeah, it's really interesting because it's going to be debuted in Xiaomi's S15s Pro smartphones and their Pad 7 Ultra. So this is not necessarily their flagship phones and tablets, but it's more of a upper middle tier. And it's really interesting because you get different perspectives of how this competes with the rest of the market. But truthfully, I think this is a more of a play to potentially satisfy the Chinese government with homegrown silicon. Yeah. It has a 10-core CPU with two of ARM's latest X925 cores, and then a bunch of other lower power cores. And then it has a 16-core Immortalis G925. So it's not using custom CPU cores. It's using off-the-shelf cores from ARM, which are competitive, but they're not top tier like Apple and Qualcomm's quite yet. So it's really interesting to see that this is happening at the same time that this happened. Xiaomi also announced a long-term agreement with Qualcomm to continue to buy their chips for their flagship phones and for their cars. It's really interesting, the timing of these announcements, and to see how these companies are jockeying for position in the silicon space. But I think that really what this is more of an agreement for Xiaomi to build their own chips to keep the Chinese government happy, but also to work with Qualcomm to get the latest, fastest, most advanced chips for the products, because they've been working together for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And this announcement was another extension of that partnership. They didn't really say how many years. It says multi-year agreement, but generally these tend to be 3 to 5 year agreements. And I think we will probably see Xiaomi continue to ship Qualcomm at the high end. And if anything, this might be more of a threat to MediaTek than Qualcomm, specifically in terms of the high end. Although I will say Xiaomi does use both in their phones, but I do think that Xiaomi wants to keep the Chinese government happy, but also still get the best chips.
Yeah, they're a very prominent Chinese brand. And so I think it checks the box on Chinese domestic supply chain, number one. It also gives them some supply chain diversity, I would think. And then the third thought I have is that it could be a margin enhancement opportunity. As you mentioned, it's in the mid-tier, right? It's not the low end, but it's the mid-tier. So that it might be a margin enhancement opportunity for them as well. Yeah, I mean, I think it's always good to be supply chain diversified, even at the silicon level.
Yeah, and I'll just add one thing. It's being fabbed at TSMC on the N3E node, which mm-hmm. is actually a current node, which is the same as MediaTek's 9400. So it'd actually be pretty close to performance to the MediaTek Dimensity 9400. But oddly enough, I don't know that Xiaomi is on the banned entity list. So they can produce these at TSMC for the foreseeable future until someone decides that they are dangerous enough to be banned from using TSMC and other fab entities. So I don't know how they managed to get this done, but it might be that this is low enough volume that it's not a concern.
And they're also a consumer brand, right? And so they don't do anything from an enterprise infrastructure perspective like ZTE and Huawei do, right?
Correct.
So I think because it's consumer, it's low risk. I own a couple of their scooters that I keep in my
because they bought Ninebot, which then bought Segway.
Yeah, that I keep at my condo in Isla Mirada. But I think it's probably because they're a consumer goods company primarily, if not entirely, and it's low risk. But yeah, interesting stuff. Hey, my friend, we got through that pretty quickly, given it's a three-day weekend upon us. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide insights for a specific 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at Willtown Tech, and I'm at Anshul Sog. We hope you have a great holiday weekend, and please tune in again next week, and don't forget to rate us and subscribe.
And we wish all the best to all the veterans that have fought in all of these wars over the years. So happy Memorial Day.
Thanks.